This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Theoretically, green energy advocates and conservationists, well, they all want the same thing, a healthier, greener world. But solar energy projects in Nevada, they've pitted two groups against each other. Why is that? Today on CityCast Las Vegas, we talk with Nevada Current reporter Jennifer Solis, who just wrote about the latest solar controversy at a site only 40 miles outside of Las Vegas, which could supply much-needed power to our city, but also kill hundreds of desert tortoises. It's Wednesday, March 27th. I'm David Figler, and here's what Las Vegas is talking about. Jennifer, there's two sides to this solar controversy in Nevada, but aren't there environmentalists on both sides? Isn't everyone supposed to be on the same side here?
For the most part, there is just one side, and that's preventing climate change. There's mostly just a disagreement about where these solar projects should be placed that'll cause the least environmental destruction and bring the most benefit to preventing climate change.
I guess, Jennifer, we've heard some version of this kind of story before, many times, whether it's buckwheat or pupfish or sage grouse. But in your most recent piece for the Nevada Current, you wrote about the controversy over the what's called the Rough Hat Clark County Solar Project and its impact on the Mojave Desert Tortoise. So what's going on over there?
Yeah, so Nevada has the most public land of any state that's not Alaska, which makes it a prime location for these big utility scale solar projects. The problem is that this area is also home to the endangered Mojave Desert tortoise. It's the only location, the Mojave Desert, where the tortoise lives. It's a very unique, amazing species that survives here in an area with very limited water. So there's these two really important projects, basically. One is saving the endangered desert tortoise, and the other is moving our society towards electrification to prevent climate change.
I want to hear a little bit more about these tortoises that you wrote about. How many of these little guys or big guys are over there in this unique area, and why do they seem to thrive there?
All right. So throughout the Mojave Desert, there's these different populations of the desert tortoise, which are categorized into conservation areas. This specific area where the solar project would be constructed, they estimate there's about 114 adult tortoises in the area. And that's not counting juvenile or hatchlings, which can't be removed from the area because they have a habit of dying when they're moved from their habitat, which adult desert tortoises tend to survive a tad better.
And why is that? What's so special about this little area that these 100 and so adult and their offspring are living and thriving, I guess, right now?
Yeah, so the Mojave Desert gets very, very little rain, very little snow melt, but higher elevations do get better amounts of rain and snow melt. So this particular area where this solar panel would go is 3,000 feet elevation, which means it gets 5 to 10 inches of rain a year, which is incredible for the Mojave Desert. This is why it's prime tortoise habitat. They sit in a puddle of water, collect that water in their bladder, and use it for the entire year. So an area that gets that amount of water is incredibly important for the survival of these desert tortoises, because there's no rivers, you know, there's no springs and seeps in the Mojave. Right. Well, there are, but not to the degree that a living creature needs.
Yeah, no, and the way you describe it is just adorable. I'm just picturing these just tortoises chilling in these little water puddles and just storing up.
It really is adorable how these tortoises like survive. So they can even sense when a storm is coming, like they know, and they'll come out of their burrows or they'll move towards washes where they know there will be this accumulation of water, and they just like soak in it.
And how do conservationists say that the solar farm would harm those tortoises?
So both construction and the solar panels themselves can be destructive to habitat. One, during construction, a lot of heavy equipment is used, which can crush juvenile and young tortoises who can't be removed from the site without a high rate of death when they're relocated. But even adult tortoises have a hard time adapting to relocation, even across short distances. So there's this one study by the U.S. Geological Survey that tracked 158 desert tortoises that were relocated. They were relocated less than 10 miles from their habitat. Within the first 3 years, 50% of those adult tortoises died. And at the end of the study, only 17% survived. And that was mostly due to predators.
Yeah. And I mean, that's only 10 miles away. So it's not like you're taking them from, you know, the Vegas desert and putting them in, you know, the Alaskan tundra or something. You know, it's just down the road.
It all has to do with how good the habitat you're relocating them to. In this specific project, they would relocate them to an area called Stump Canyon and Trout Canyon that does have some water resources, but it might not be enough. You just don't know because it hasn't been done at this scale before.
Is there any way to put in the solar without harming the tortoises or relocating them without any specific harm?
Desert tortoises don't like development. They tend to not live within 30 minutes of any development. That's transmission lines, solar panels, water lines, basically anything.
They just want to be left alone.
They want to be left alone.
Basically.
Yeah.
Jennifer, did you get a chance to ask the Rough Hat people why they are so insistent on this particular space?
So there are a lot of planned solar projects within the Mojave Desert, within Amargosa Valley, because it's close enough to infrastructure from big cities like Las Vegas and far enough away where it's not going to get pushback from residents of the city.
Oh, right, right.
So you choose your opponents, the conservationists or a city.
Or the NIMBYs.
Or the NIMBYs, yeah.
Hey, it's David Figler, and one of my favorite food festivals is coming back to town. It's Vegas Unstripped over at the Palms Hotel on Saturday, May 18th. Over 24 chefs from some of Las Vegas's most talked about restaurants creating original, unique menu items they've never made before. Chef creativity at its best. We're talking chefs from Partage, Esther's Kitchen, Milpa, EDO, and more, including this year's James Beard Award finalist Steve Kessler from Aroma. Tickets are $150 and are all inclusive of food and drink, so you don't have to pay for anything once you're inside. No hidden upcharges. I went last year, and it was so crowded in the best possible way. We got one remarkable dish after another, and while it was a little indulgent, here's the best part. The net proceeds go to local charities. So head on over to VegasUnstripped.com to get your tickets now. We'll see you there. So, I mean, it does look like Rough Hat is going to have a rough time with this solar project in Nevada, but it's not the first disputed solar project. Jennifer, besides tortoises, what are some other reasons that solar farms are, you know, creating so much controversy in our state?
There are a lot of reasons. Of course, for conservationists, it's the habitat. Is it worth building these large-scale utility projects at the cost of these endangered species, which have every right to live in that area as we do? And for a lot of rural Nevadans, has a lot to do with water. Hmm. Construction for solar projects does take water. And Nevada is the driest state in the union. We have the least amount of rainfall, the least amount of snowmelt. Water is a really contentious topic. It's, well, what water are they going to use? And how is that going to affect us?
And how much water do they use? How much do these solar projects typically take? And why?
It really depends on the project. So this project would require 800 acre feet of water for the construction phase and 16 acre feet of water each year for operation. So you don't think of solar farms as needing water throughout its entire lifetime, but they do.
No, I think it needs sun. So where's the water come in?
So part of the water is used to basically water down the area so that dust doesn't become an issue. There are EPA requirements that companies have to maintain a certain level of air quality, and uprooting plants creates dust, especially with how windy Nevada is, and could be an issue for air quality. So that's part of what the water is used for during construction.
So we have habitat impact, we have water usage. Any other reasons why these solar farms are not being warmly embraced everywhere they want to put them?
Yeah, another issue that these smaller rural Nevada towns have is that they just don't have the infrastructure to accommodate these large-scale projects. Amargosa Valley, for example, depends on volunteer firefighters. It doesn't have a hospital. You have to drive an hour to get to any sort of clinic. There is a large concern that if a problem arises from these large-scale developments, they have limited resources.
So do you think that the rurals, I guess in cahoots with the conservationists, are just trying to convince us to build solar on rooftops and mining sites instead of doing these habitats?
That is ideal for many rural residents and conservationists, is to build these solar farms in areas that are already developed. That includes Yucca Mountain, rooftop solar in cities.
So is that being done yet? I mean, is it a viable alternative?
So rooftop solar is something clearly we're already doing in Las Vegas. There are rebates, tax incentives to put in these rooftop solar projects on homes. But for many Nevadans, it's an issue of cost. These projects cost thousands of dollars. That's just money that a lot of Nevadans don't have to spare. So it's slow going. And there's the argument that to prevent climate change, we're going to need these large solar farms built quickly. And the easiest way to do that is a solar farm in an undeveloped area in the desert.
Do you think, Jennifer, that that urgency in responding to climate change is a message that resonates in the rurals?
That's, again, complicated. It does, in a way, because every rural Nevadan understands that there's a water shortage. You go to any rural Nevada town and there's stories about wells running dry, but rural Nevadans aren't entirely convinced that large-scale solar within their towns is the answer. Because again, it would need water, and that's their main issue, their main concern. Once a town doesn't have water, it'll become a ghost town. And we see this throughout Nevada, pockets of ghost towns from mining and from resources being extracted and people moving on.
Yeah, I know that favorite saying of the rurals, whiskey's for drinking, but water's for fighting over.
Yeah.
Right? I wonder if some of those rural folks think that, you know, when they see these projects going up that generate energy, if they're the ones paying the price for our city's growing energy needs. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that is a common feeling among Nevada rural residents. First, they're the first ones affected. You talk to any rural resident in Nevada, and again, their wells have run dry for many of them. So in their eyes, they're already being affected, and they have to pay the price of these large-scale projects moving into their towns and using more of the little water they have. That's a big sentiment, and it's understandable.
Oh, no, I mean, I absolutely get it, but we do have these competing demands, right? I mean, climate crisis is urgent, as you discuss it. The green energy advocates have their point. These folks that are, you know, paying the price or making some sacrifices have their point. So how do we balance all these competing demands?
The question you just asked is like the question everybody's asking right now.
Good.
It's that it's so complicated that there's no simple solution. Yes, climate change is quickly approaching and something needs to be done quickly. Something probably should have been done a decade ago, but this is where we stand at the moment. So it's like we want to save endangered species and the climate and protect our water, but the solution is to like eliminate all of that. So it's you're between a rock and a hard place. What's the solution?
Like literally out there, those rocks and those hard places. but kidding aside, public comment on this topic of the Rough Hat construction is going to be open until April 11th. I hope people are as thoughtful as this conversation has been about the competing demands. So where can folks go to weigh in, Jennifer?
Yeah, so you can submit a comment online on BLM's site, the BLM National Environmental Protection Act Register.
Okay, and we'll provide a link to that in our show notes so that people can hopefully just do a click. Jennifer Solis of the Nevada Current, thanks so much for sharing all this information about your recent story.
Yeah, and thank you for inviting me on. I'm always ready to talk about tortoises.
That's all for today here on CityCast Las Vegas. If you enjoyed the show, hey, go tell a friend, rate the show, leave us a review too, and subscribe to our morning newsletter. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the valley. Till then, especially if you're a tortoise, stay lucky.
I don't think I can say the whole link on air because it involves a lot of numbers.
https://number874867530 sort of thing.